From the Voice of America in Washington, this is VOA Global. I'm Ira Melman.
Hi, Ira. I'm Jim Stevenson. On the program today, we explore the growing business of online English learning throughout Asia.
We have the latest from the streets of Hong Kong, where the remnants of a protest remain.
In the American Cafe, a visit to Maker Faire, where creativity is paramount.
David Byrd checks in with his Now feature. Today, it's about saving many young lives around the world.
We look to the condition of Pele in sports, who has been hospitalized.
All of that and more on today's edition of VOA Global. It comes to you from the Voice of America in Washington. Stay with us.
Glad to have you along. This is Daybreak Asia, a summary of Asian news and events for Monday, November 26th. I'm Jim Stevenson. In brief today, Hong Kong authorities arrested 80 people while clearing street barricades at a site where pro-democracy demonstrators have camped for nearly 2 months. Bailiffs backed by dozens of police removed the obstructions early Tuesday from Argyle Street in the Mong Kok district. The protesters did not initially resist and instead stood nearby yelling at police. But some later obstructed the police, who began taking dozens into custody. It is the second time in as many weeks that authorities have acted on a court order to clear parts of the protests. Local media said officials are planning to clear a larger section of the Mong Kok demonstration site near Nathan Road today. The protests have shrunk in recent weeks, and organizers are struggling to find ways to re-energize the so-called Occupy movement. India's only Muslim-majority state, Jammu and Kashmir, is going to the polls to choose a new state government. Anjana Pasricha joins us from New Delhi and says the ruling Hindu Nationalist Party is making a bold bid for power in a region where it never had significant presence and where anti-India sentiment runs high.
Despite boycott calls by Muslim separatists and chilly weather, voters stood in long lines in Jammu and Kashmir state to cast ballots for 15 seats. Tuesday's voting was the first phase in the five-stage election being held in the troubled region. Most attention is focused on how the Bharatiya Janata Party, a marginal player in the state so far, will fare. It is contesting 70 out of 87 seats and has termed its election campaign Mission 44+. The BJP's hopes of swinging a victory have been raised by its landslide national win in May and by the impressive victories it notched up in two states last month. But its bid to rule the Himalayan state has taken many aback. The troubled region is dominated by Muslims, many of whom regard the Hindu Nationalist Party as anti-Muslim and view it with deep suspicion. Although a violent Muslim separatist insurgency has cooled, anti-India sentiment is high in Kashmir, which is also claimed by Pakistan. Still, BJP spokesman Siddharth Nath Singh is optimistic about his party's performance in the state. His party is pinning its hopes on the popularity of Prime Minister Narendra Modi.
Narendra Modi ji stands as an icon for development, and that gives us a lot of hope when we look at the youngsters of Jammu and Kashmir.
BJP candidates, nearly half of whom are Muslim, are trying to sway voters with talk of expressways, of jobs, and of transforming Kashmir into an international tourist hub. The party is mostly banking on a good performance in the Hindu-dominated Jammu region and Buddhist-dominated Ladakh region to shore up its numbers. But it will need to wrest some support in the Kashmir Valley to become a credible political player. Political analyst Satish Misra at the Observer Research Foundation in New Delhi says the BJP hopes that disenchantment with the two regional parties and the Congress Party, which dominate local politics, will work to its advantage.
In Jammu and Kashmir, there have been coalition governments which have disappointed people terribly, you know. No government in the last 10 years has been able to deliver.
The disillusionment deepened after devastating floods racked Kashmir in September, and the state government was criticized for doing little to help people. A recent opinion poll in the state said the BJP could emerge as the biggest party in the state, but fall short of the majority mark. The polls will conclude on December 20th, and votes will be counted on December 23rd. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Indonesia says it is continuing its efforts to prevent more of its citizens from joining the Islamic State. An official at the Terrorism Management National Agency, Wawan Peranto, tells VOA that 300 citizens have joined the radical group so far, with 60 reported dead. He says their ages range from 17 to 25 and that they are from various parts of Indonesia. He says they were all recruited by IS sympathizers in Indonesia who are categorized as radicals. According to Wawan, Indonesian recruits who left for Syria received allowances of $1,500 for accommodations and transportation. He adds that all had undergone military training by radical groups that have fighting experience in Afghanistan and the Philippines. Like many countries, China is taking extensive steps to keep the deadly Ebola virus from reaching its shores, but the government has released little information about just what those measures include. China's southern port of Guangzhou has the biggest African population in all of Asia. VOA's Bill Ide stopped by there to get a first-hand look at the hotel where travelers from Ebola-hit countries are required to stay while being monitored by health workers.
This hotel is a crucial, unreported link in China's Ebola prevention measures. It is still open for regular business, but at least several floors have been reserved for potential Ebola carriers, health workers, and Chinese security officials. To find out more, VOA roamed its halls quietly. Those who spoke on camera asked that we protect their identity. Mohammed is a trader from Sierra Leone.
When I came first, I was so frustrated, you know, because the place I usually used to stay, when I would reject me, when I produced my passport, I said, no, I'm sorry, we can't allow you. It was like 2 to 3 hours. So I was so tired. You know, I took about a 15-hour flight from Africa to here. I want to ease myself. I want to take a bath. I can't.
After several hotel rejections, Mohammed finally learned the Hotel Canton was where he had to stay. Others here learned about it through friends. Everyone we spoke with said they appreciate having a place to stay for free, but some voiced concerns. A trader from the Democratic Republic of Congo says hotel staff change their towels but not their bed sheets. The assumption, she says, is the hotel burns their linens after they leave.
The disease is in Africa, so they have to take these measures. But they should not treat people like dogs. However, we're not sick. They come to check us every morning and every evening. They check our temperature and see if we have a cough. Since we've been here, no one has shown signs of the disease, but they don't trust us. We're not told anything.
Musa is from Togo but carries a Guinea passport. We interviewed him on the street outside the hotel after management voiced concerns we were disturbing its guests.
All the people from Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone, all those people who have documents from those countries are perceived to have Ebola as soon as they present their documents. But there are also foreigners who've been to those countries but are not considered to have Ebola. So it is not people who have Ebola, it is the passports.
For many of China's new arrivals from Africa, the measures in place here are unlikely to change anytime soon. Bill Ide, VOA News, Guangzhou.
There's some great video to that story. Stop by our website at voanews.com to check it out. I'm Jim Stevenson. Daybreak Asia comes to you every weekday on VOA Global. It's also a podcast. Subscribe to it at voanews.com.
On VOA Global from the Voice of America, along with Jim Stevenson, I'm Ira Melman, and this is the time that we like to hear from you. Well, some comments you've made as far as some stories we have read. Let me read the first one for you. This week, government ministers from Southeast Asia are meeting in Bangkok to discuss how to improve official registrations of births, deaths, and marriages, critical measures for providing government services.
Tom Murphy from Heartland America writes, the Philippines has a serious problem in recording births, deaths, and marriages, which was formerly done by the church. People can disappear and not be recognized as missing. Also, immigration records are are not well recorded, and if a person travels outside the country, they can disappear, and nobody would ever know it except relatives.
Heartland America, is that in Iowa?
I think so.
North Korea has issued a strongly worded statement warning of catastrophic consequences for the United States and other countries that supported the recent UN resolution condemning North Korea's human rights record. North Korea's threat to retaliate could signal that it intends to soon conduct a new nuclear test.
Eusebio Manuel Vestias from Portugal writes, diplomacy and peace advances human rights in North Korea.
Tom Murphy, well, let's take another story. So far, the most buzz surrounding this week's SAARC summit has been the Pakistani Prime Minister's refusal to use an India-made bulletproof car during the upcoming events.
Pankaj Nathani from Pakistan writes, until the country is free from compulsive politics of hating India, there is at least hope of getting that situation better. We hope you write to us, too. VOA Asia at voanews.com or stop by Weibo, Twitter, Facebook, and check us out. From the Voice of America, this is VOA Global. I'm Jim Stevenson, along with Ira Melman. Coming up, we'll have more on the Hong Kong protesters being cleared from the streets on China Focus.
You want a good business to enter? I'll talk to somebody who has done just that, along with a lot of other people. Billions of people want to learn English. A lot of them, perhaps the majority, are in Asia. And we'll check out that business coming up right now in our education report on the Voice of America. I'm Ira Melman with Report on Education. By the year 2020, the world will have 2 billion English users or learners. That estimate by the British Council, along with other similar predictions, has made the business of teaching English to non-English speakers a booming enterprise. The educational market research firm Ambient Insight is monitoring that trend. The company's study of commercial online or e-learning courses claims the total market for English language learning in China alone was just over $323 million. The estimate for 2018 is just under $931 million, a jump of over 23%. Beyond China, the thirst for English language ability is most intense in developing Asian countries. Sam Atkins is the chief research officer for Ambient Insight and led the study.
In many countries in Asia, the government, there's a federal education system. But in many of those countries, the parents still have to buy the textbooks. So the buyers and the sellers in each country are slightly different. For instance, in general, we can say in Asia that the government-funded, government-operated K-12 systems are the top buyers. But that's not true in every country. For example, in South Korea, consumers, 42% of all expenditures on e-learning in South Korea are by consumers, which is unprecedented nowhere else in the world. And it's mostly for test prep and for language learning.
Is e-learning replacing the textbook?
To a degree, you know, and it's largely because of education government mandates. On country-wide scale, for instance, in China, 100% of the curricula, the federal curriculum, is digitized. But very few, relatively speaking, percentage-wise, very few children actually have access to it yet. And China's doing really good work in getting them access to it. So to some degree, in the school systems, it's replacing print. But I would say we call it cannibalization. It's our product substitution. To a greater extent, what it's doing, it's replacing classroom instructions.
So how does an e-learning experience differ from a classroom experience?
It's obviously self-paced. It's, you know, the course is packaged for the most part. It's usually on the web. And basically, it's not group interaction, and you're not taught by a live instructor. Now, we do have a category of learning technology we watch, which is collaboration-based learning, and that's when, you know, there's a live instructor that's either doing one-to-one tutoring or a one-to-many classroom experience. So, but e-learning, the way we define e-learning, it's basically a one-to-one experience with a student and a packaged course, online course. One of the most dynamic markets for e-learning right now is Myanmar. What happened in Myanmar was, I think most people who watch the news know this, is that the military government allowed civilian elections in 2011. And then in 2011, all of a sudden we have a civilian government. But the government also opened up the market to free economy. They allowed foreign investment, and they instituted major, massive, rolling education reform in Myanmar. So it was a bumpy ride at the beginning, but now it's an incredible place. The other one is tourism. Is the governments are funding what we call tourism English, you know? So they're training thousands and thousands. Their people are the tourism and hospitality employees, government funded, to get them proficient in English because they're trying to attract more and more tourism. And Myanmar is a really good example where they're really serious about building out the tourism industry.
Sam Atkins, the Chief Research Officer for Ambient Insight. You can hear Report on Education anytime at voanews.com as well as on many podcast platforms. I'm Ira Melman.
I'm Sarah Williams with China Focus. In Hong Kong, authorities arrested 80 people while clearing street barricades at a protest site where pro-democracy demonstrators have camped since late September. The demonstrators want fully democratic elections in 2017. VOA Mandarin Service reporter Haiyan observed Tuesday's events in the city's Mong Kok district.
Bailiffs from the high court and the authorized attorney and personnel, with the help of the Hong Kong police, which deployed about 3,000 policemen, cleared the junction of Ardilly Street and the Nathan Road from about 10 a.m. And the clearing of that section by the court injunction went on pretty smoothly in the morning. But in the late afternoon, after all the barricades and the tents were cleared, the court bailiffs required all the protesters on the street to move, to leave. But most of the protesters refused. So the bailiffs requested the police to clear the road. And the police arrested more than 23 total during the day, clearing the site.
Did you witness any violence or any pepper spray?
In the morning, during the clearing, there was no violence. But in the afternoon, there were some push-off between the police and the protesters, and 23 people were arrested, but no pepper spray were used.
As the authorities were trying to clear the area, I have read reports that additional people, additional crowds, started coming into the protest sites. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah. That's after about 4 o'clock. The junction at Ardilly Street and the Nathan Road were cleared, and the traffic was restored. And after that, a lot of the protesters moved to the nearby street, Bolan, and gathered there. So the police start to disperse them around 5 o'clock and make them rest. And then they came to a standoff, I think 5 o'clock. And then around the 7 o'clock in the evening, the police bring in riot police, and then they have 4 or 5 layers of riot police pushing the protesters off the street, Bolan Street, towards protesters southwards on the street. And then during the push, and the police used not pepper spray, it is a pepper spray like coated tear water. They didn't spray a squirrel, you know, it's like water. The police explained it's like a pepper spray, but it's called tear water. That's what the Chinese says.
Now, I know you were in this region and then you have since left, but would you say...
Yeah, I came back at 7 o'clock.
And what was the situation like around 7 o'clock later on into the evening?
And at a lot of junctions, along the street of Poland, particularly at the junctions of Shandong Street and Poland Street. Like hundreds of protesters came to stand off with the police. And then the police pushed people off the Shandong Street into Shanghai Street and Jintian Street. And during the process, police made scores of arrests. So for the night, it is reported that police made total more than 80 arrests.
Now, as far as you understand, what are the plans for tomorrow? I believe I saw on the web there was a picture about a court order for, I guess, additional sites to be cleared.
I was talking to a police official from the police and the citizen relations department. The police official said, as far as he knows, there's no change to the plan.
Reporter Hai Yan in Hong Kong. Follow us on Weibo. That's China Focus. I'm Sarah Williams.
From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Asia Business News. Asian stocks mostly fell Tuesday as the boost from China's surprise interest rate cuts faded and investors awaited U.S. economic data and the OPEC meeting. Australia's S&P ASX 200 fell 0.7%. South Korea's Kospi inched down 0.1%. Hong Kong's Hang Seng was down 0.1%. Most Southeast Asian stock markets were lower, but Japan's Nikkei traded 0.2% higher at 17,393. Asian stocks did climb Monday when they had their first opportunity to react to China's announcement late Friday of interest rate cuts.
China UnionPay, the country's sole bank card provider, is planning to launch an Android-based Chinese payment app next year, according to Chinese media reports. MarketWatch says several reports say the move was a bid to compete with the fast-growing third-party payment processors like Alibaba. The Android payment app is still under development. It's expected to be launched in the third quarter of 2015.
A Chinese internet firm Tencent is partnering with Time Warner's HBO network to stream its TV shows, which are known for their provocative content and may draw scrutiny from the country's authorities. Tencent will be the exclusive online provider of HBO series like Game of Thrones, which features gore, nudity, and incense, True Detective, and Boardwalk Empire, China's top social network and gaming firm said on Tuesday, according to Reuters. Even as China's internet TV firms have pumped more than $1 billion into foreign content in less than 2 years in a bid to attract more viewers, government regulators have stepped up their oversight of the previously freewheeling industry. That's a look at news, business news from Asia.
This is Today in History. On November 26th, 1476, Vlad III, also known as Vlad the Impaler, the harsh ruler from whom the Dracula legend sprang, joined other leaders in defeating the ruler of the Principality of Wallachia. Vlad then became the ruler of the territory, which was located in modern-day Romania. In 1789, U.S. President George Washington proclaimed November 26th as a day of public thanksgiving and prayer. In 1941, President Franklin Roosevelt signed a measure into law making the fourth Thursday of each November an official Thanksgiving holiday. In 2000, George W. Bush was certified the winner of Florida's electoral votes, going on to win the United States presidential election following a Supreme Court vote. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
This is VOA Global.
There you go. In hey, stereo.
A duet in stereo.
That's right.
From the Voice of America. And we want to tell you that Budweiser, ever see a Budweiser commercial?
Yes.
Yeah, they have the Clydesdales, those big white horses, those gorgeous white horses. Well, guess what? Budweiser is putting them out to pasture for the holidays. The country's number three beer brand, Budweiser, says the horses won't play a role in its traditional advertising for the season, although the company added that later Monday that they'll be featured in sports promoting responsible drinking. The problem is that Budweiser is not the beer of choice for younger people these days. They're going more toward the craft beers, they say.
That's right. Well, that should be interesting to see. Their Super Bowl ads when they come up in February. Latest world news is next.
From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Brown family urges peace after night of violence in Ferguson, Missouri. Syrian airstrikes kill dozens in Raqqa. Plague outbreak in Madagascar. Those stories and more coming up. I'm Ray Kugel. The family of slain Missouri teenager Michael Brown is appealing for calm after a grand jury decided not to indict the white police officer who shot and killed him in August. Brown's mother and father appeared Tuesday at a news conference in a Ferguson church alongside their lawyers and Reverend Al Sharpton. The lawyers spoke on their behalf. Attorney Benjamin Crump said the family's legal team objects publicly and loudly to the legal process that led the grand jury to decide not to charge Officer Darren Wilson for shooting the unarmed black 18-year-old. He described it as completely unfair. But he said the family condemns Monday night's violence and looting in Ferguson, which followed the jury decision announcement. Protesters looted businesses and set fire to cars and at least a dozen buildings. Police say 61 people were arrested, but no serious injuries were reported. Governor Jay Nixon ordered more National Guardsmen into Ferguson to help local law enforcement keep order in that St. Louis suburb. St. Louis Mayor Francis Slay regretted the violence.
It's unacceptable. It's wrong. The vast majority of people living in our region condemn it as well. And I think the unfortunate part about it is what that violence does is it not only puts a black eye on our community, but it really sets back the cause of social justice.
Attorney General Eric Holder says federal investigations continue into the shoot and into whether the Ferguson Police Department is engaging in unconstitutional practices. About 40 people are dead after two female suicide bombers attacked a market Tuesday in the northeast Nigerian city of Maiduguri. Witnesses say the first bomber set off her explosives, killing at least three. As people gathered at the blast site, the second bomb went off, and there is no claim of responsibility. Activists are saying at least 60 people were killed when Syrian warplanes conducted a series of strikes in the Islamic State's self-proclaimed capital of Raqqa. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says the strikes on Tuesday hit an industrial zone and a popular market near the city's museum. The observatory says at least 36 of those killed were civilians. Iran Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei says the United States and European colonialist powers failed in their efforts to bring Iran to its knees during negotiations on the country's nuclear program. The comments posted on his website Tuesday are his first since negotiators from Iran and a group of world powers agreed to extend talks on Iran's nuclear program through the middle of next year. The extension came after the two sides failed to reach agreement by Monday's deadline to ensure Iran's nuclear program is peaceful in exchange for easing sanctions that have hurt the country's economy. Pope Francis received standing ovations during speeches before the European Parliament and the Council of Europe Tuesday in Strasbourg, France. In both places, the Pope called on Europe to wake up and re-embrace its principles of human rights and democracy. Lisa Bryant has details.
Jobs, democracy, human rights, and peace. Pope Francis contrasted Europe's soaring principles with a more disappointing reality as he addressed two key European institutions in Strasbourg, France. In the first papal address ever to the European Union Parliament, the pontiff urged the 28-member bloc to support a courageous, open, and humanitarian immigration policy. Referring to the many migrants who have drowned trying to reach Europe's shores in recent years, he warned against transforming the Mediterranean Sea into what he called a vast cemetery.
Sulle coste europee ci sono uomini e donne che necessitano di accoglienza e di aiuto.
Pope Francis said boats of migrants are landing daily on Europe's shores, filled with men and women needing acceptance and assistance. He warned against the risk of creating immigration policies that fail to uphold human dignity, put lives at risk, and feed social conflict. The Pope urged EU lawmakers to keep democracy alive. He warned against a political and economic union that puts bureaucracy ahead of great ideas. He said he wanted to bring a message of hope to a demoralized Europe that risked losing its soul and humanistic spirit. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
At the Council of Europe, Pope Francis spoke of the threat of conflict and terrorism that confront nations in the 21st century. France is suspending until further notice delivery of a warship to Russia because of the Ukraine crisis. President François Hollande's office announced the decision Tuesday. France is facing strong criticism by its allies over the deal because of Russia's annexation of Crimea and support for separatists in eastern Ukraine. Hong Kong authorities have arrested 80 people while clearing street barricades at a site where pro-democracy demonstrators have camped for almost 2 months. Bailiffs, backed by dozens of police, removed obstructions Tuesday from Argyle Street in the Mong Kok District. The World Health Organization is warning an outbreak of plague in Madagascar could spread rapidly throughout the country. The disease has already killed 47 people, and the number of suspected cases is close to 140. Lisa Schlein reports.
The plague is not new to Madagascar. It recurs annually. However, WHO spokesman Christian Lindmeier says the UN Health Agency is particularly concerned about this outbreak because the number of cases of plague appears to be higher than in recent years.
Cases have been reported in 16 districts of 7 regions. In Antananarivo, the capital and largest city in Madagascar, also 2 recorded cases have been identified, including 1 death. There is now a risk of rapid spread of the disease due to the city's high population density and the weakness of the healthcare system.
The first case of the plague was identified on August 31st. The patient died 3 days later. However, the authorities in Madagascar did not notify WHO of the outbreak until November 4th. Lindmeier says measures for the control and prevention of plague are being implemented in the affected districts. He says personal protective equipment, insecticides, spray materials, and antibiotics are being made available in those areas. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The busiest travel day of the year could be a rough one for millions of Americans Wednesday. A major winter storm called a nor'easter is forecast to hit the eastern seaboard from Maine down to South Carolina the day Americans hit the roads, rails, and skies for Thursday's Thanksgiving holiday. Meteorologists say coastal regions can expect heavy rain and high winds, while some areas to the west could see as much as 40 centimeters of snow. Large cities, including Boston, New York, and Philadelphia, will feel the impact. And that's it for this edition of International Edition. There's always more right here at voanews.com. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
Time for business news on VOA Global. U.S. stocks edged higher again Tuesday as investors assessed the latest reports on the economy. The U.S. economy grew at a solid 3.9% annual rate in the July through September period, even faster than first reported. That gave the country its strongest 6 months of growth in more than a decade. The third quarter growth rate climbed from an initial estimate of 3.5% because of greater spending by consumers and businesses, according to the Commerce Department Tuesday. The figure followed a 4.6% surge in the spring, which resulted in the biggest consecutive quarters of growth since 2003.
Meanwhile, U.S. consumer confidence fell in November following a big gain in the previous month. The Conference Board said its consumer confidence index fell to 88.7 in November, down from a 7-year high of 94.5 in October. This decline primarily reflected reduced optimism in the short-term outlook as consumers expressed less confidence in current business conditions.
U.S. home prices rose in September, but at the slowest pace in more than 2 years. That reflected modest sales gains and a rising number of available homes. The Standard & Poor's Case-Shiller 20-City Home Price Index released Tuesday increased 4.9% in September from 12 months earlier, but that's down from 5.6% in August and the smallest gain since October 2012.
Energy stocks fell as the price of crude oil resumed its decline. Investors are seeing signs that some of the world's major producers of crude will fail to agree to a production cut at a meeting this week. And there are the moments the OPEC exists for as OPEC does start its meeting. We'll see whether they decide to cut production or not. That's a look at global business from the Voice of America.
This is VOA Global on the Voice of America. Jim Stevenson along with Ira Melman. Coming up, David Byrd and Now. And David will be telling us about millions of babies who are born prematurely each year worldwide and what happens to them. But first,
did you ever hear of a maker fair? It's all the rage, you know, all over, and it's where inventors and hobbyists and a whole bunch and a lot of kids get together to be creative. That's all part of American Cafe coming up now. I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Hands-on creations from robots to rockets were highlighted at a Northern Virginia Maker Faire. Artists, inventors, and hobbyists share their knowledge of things they make themselves, which included science innovations. VOA's Deborah Block takes us to the fair in Reston, Virginia, where children discover that science can be both informative and fun.
I just like to sew.
With metallic conductive thread, this girl creates a simple electronic circuit. Artist Sally Byers incorporates tiny lights like this in her clothing designs. She says the art of making things yourself is disappearing and hopes the younger generation will continue to create whatever moves them.
I want them to learn that they can make it happen, whatever it might be. They can do all kinds of stuff, but I'm not sure they learn that at school.
But they can learn it at Maker Faires, which began in the United States 8 years ago as a gathering for people who enjoy creating and sharing. Now the fairs have spread worldwide to countries like Nigeria, China, and Egypt. Robots were popular at the fair. Drones that flew, and robots designed like the Mars rover that the children could control. Engineer Ivan Galish says the robot can be built from a kit.
So they actually have a rocker suspension system designed to go over rough terrain, uneven terrain, and keeping all the four wheels on the ground.
9-year-old Mamun Kolovos enjoyed learning about the robots.
How they go through the ramps and how fast you can make it go or rotate it around.
These kids are propelling pieces of plastic representing small rockets. The display is sponsored by a high school team that builds high-powered motorized rockets. Senior Allison Yu shows off their homemade creations. She says the team did a project with NASA, the U.S. Space Agency.
Our body tube is made out of a cardboard-like material. Because we designed our own pieces, we bought the materials and then also cut them ourselves. The rocket that we did for our project went to about 3,600 feet.
Yu plans to become a rocket scientist. Fair organizers hope today's activities launch lots of the young people here into exciting creative careers. Deborah Block, VOA News, Reston, Virginia.
A record number of Americans are moving into cities and at the same time are curbing their driving habits. No better example than New York City, as VOA's Bernard Schussman reports.
3.4 billion riders on New York City subways and buses a year. This amazing number equals one-third of all mass transit trips in the United States. Ridership is at its highest in almost 60 years in almost every American city. A commuter advocacy group, Straphangers Campaign, attributes it to younger Americans, says Gene Rushinoff.
Millennials, those people born around the turn of this past century, are much less car-oriented. They're urban, they like not owning cars, they like less responsibility, and there are a lot of them.
In addition to millennials, many people believe public transit is economical and eco-friendly. In 2012, across America, people took 10.7 billion trips. A new $4.5 billion subway line on New York's 2nd Avenue will take an overload of passengers off of other subway lines. Its first phase completion is scheduled in 2016. People who work in New York's financial district will soon be using a new transit subway transfer center. Almost all lines converge in Lower Manhattan, and this new center will give riders an easier way to get around the city and into New Jersey. New York's 24-hour, 7-day-a-week transit system costs $1.5 billion a year to maintain. It is one of the world's oldest, with its first subway line having opened in 1904. Bernard Chessman, VOA News, New York.
You are invited to join us in the American Cafe every day on voanews.com as well as numerous podcast platforms. I'm Ira Melman.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. An estimated 15 million babies are born prematurely each year worldwide. Almost 60% of them are in South Asia and sub-Saharan Africa. As VOA's Carol Pearson tells us, there are some steps being taken to save these children's lives.
Ideally, babies are in the womb for 39 weeks. Those delivered before 37 weeks may suffer delays in speech and physical coordination, have problems with vision, and suffer infections.
The brain is still developing. The respiratory lung function is still developing, so it makes the baby a lot more susceptible for complications, even long term.
Dr. Diane Ashton is with the March of Dimes, an organization that works internationally to reduce preterm births. There is no one reason for prematurity. In developing countries, part of the problem is a poor diet for pregnant women that lacks enough calcium, minerals, and calories. In the U.S., there are too many unnecessary cesarean sections. But other reasons range from a cervix damaged by the human papillomavirus to cigarette smoke, as well as many unknown factors. Fortunately, researchers have found ways to help premature babies survive. Interventions like skin-to-skin contact, which keeps the baby warm and encourages breastfeeding. The goal now is to find more ways to prevent deaths of children under five and reduce maternal mortality so children can grow up healthy and be better prepared to lead productive lives. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
About 1 million premature babies die each year, but their deaths could be prevented if they were put in an incubator. But with a price tag around $50,000, an incubator can be out of reach even for hospitals. But there is hope. VOA's George Pootage tells us how a young British inventor has come up with a low-cost, low-maintenance way to save these children.
Doctors say many expectant mothers in developing countries give birth prematurely, especially in refugee camps, largely because of poor diet and unhealthy living conditions. Premature birth is the biggest killer of children worldwide. Because these tiny babies are born before their lungs are fully developed, they are more susceptible to often deadly infections. But they could survive if placed in an incubator, where they would continue to develop in the closed chamber and warm, controlled environment. However, with a price tag of around $50,000, incubators are out of reach even for some hospitals. 23-year-old design engineering student James Roberts of Britain says his $400 inflatable incubator may help solve this problem.
It's basically an insulated piece of air, so it's like the difference between double and single glazing, so it's easier to keep the inside at a stable heat environment, heat temperature.
The incubator is collapsible and when folded resembles an ordinary travel bag. It is powered through a regular electrical line, but Roberts says he has found a solution in case there is a power outage, which often happens in refugee camps.
I thought, why not car batteries? There's loads of cars out there. You can use it. They're pretty readily available. So you can plug this into a car battery. It'll run for 24 hours. And then when the mains comes back on, the mains can then charge this battery. And then that can run in the incubator.
Roberts won the $47,000 James Dyson Award earlier this year for his incubator design. She says the project is still in the development phase, but the prize money will help him start a company for the mass manufacturing of inflatable incubators. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
To see video of these stories, log on to our website, www.voanews.com. To find out how you can help, visit the March of Dimes at www.marchofdimes.org. And be sure to let us know your opinion by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And you can email your questions or comments to voaasia@voanews.com. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
This is VOA Global on the Voice of America. You know, Ira, everybody's turning now to their cell phones to keep track of just about everything, including their calendar. But I like the old-fashioned kind, you know, the paper kind that you can open up and hold and look at pictures put on the wall.
Does anybody have those anymore?
We do.
We do.
We've got the 2015 VOA calendars. You can ask for yours just by writing to us. They're absolutely free. VOA Asia at voanews.com. Be sure to give us your correct postal address.
From VOA, it's time to check sports. FIFA Secretary General Jerome Valk has acknowledged that it will take years to rebuild our reputation following the World Cup bidding corruption investigation. But Valk insisted that Sony and Emirates Airline are not ending their FIFA sponsorships to protest against allegations of bribery and favor-seeking that have engulfed the World Football League in the 4 years since Russia was awarded the 2018 World Cup and Qatar was voted to the 2022 as a host. Emirates had already announced it's not renewing its sponsorship, and Valk said he would be surprised if Sony extended its deal, which expires at the end of the year. However, speaking in Belfast Tuesday after a meeting of the International Football Association board, Valk acknowledged the immediate future is not bright for FIFA's global standing. But he also said, we're doing a great job.
American golfer Brooks Koepka did a great job. He's been named the 2014 European Tour Rookie of the Year. Koepka finished in eighth position in the race to Dubai in his first full season on the European Tour, winning the Turkish Airlines Open and recording four other top 10 finishes to amass an impressive 2,631,873 points.
It means so much. You know, I've worked my butt off this year. And things starting to see results, and it's fun, you know, especially to cap the year off with a win in Turkey. It's made this year special, and it's a goal I've been working for a while, ever since I was able to come out, and that was the goal starting the year.
Brazilian soccer great Pelé has been hospitalized for a medical evaluation. The Albert Einstein Hospital in Sao Paulo says the three-time World Cup champion is stable after being admitted late Monday. Brazilian media says Pelé has a urinary infection, but the information couldn't be immediately confirmed. The 74-year-old Pelé was released from the same hospital about 10 days ago after successfully undergoing surgery to remove kidney stones.
Lionel Messi was the unanimous choice as leading player in the Associated Press Global Football 10 poll Tuesday after his record-breaking weekend. Messi received a maximum 180 points from the media voters for becoming the Spanish league's all-time leading scorer. That's sports.
Time to check what's happening on the music scene. This week, Taylor Swift becomes the first female artist in the 56-year history of Billboard's Hot 100 chart to succeed herself at number one. The 22-year-old, she's 22, country-turned pop star, spent the past 4 weeks in the top spot with Shake It Off, the lead single from her new album, 1989. This week, she jumps from number 13 to number one with the album's follow-up hit, Blank Space. Well, let's hear what that sounds like.
My my next mistake. Love's a game, wanna play. New money, suit and tie. I can read you like a magazine. Ain't it funny, rumors fly. And I know you heard about me, so hey, let's be friends. I'm dying to see how this one ends. Grab your passport and my hand. I can make the bad guys good for a weekend. So it's gonna be forever, or it's gonna go down in flames. You can tell me when it's over, if the high was worth the pain. Got a long list of ex-lovers, they'll tell you I'm insane. Cause you know I love the players, and you love the game. Cause we're young and we're reckless, we'll take this way too far. It'll leave you breathless, or with a nasty scar. Got a long list of ex-lovers, they'll tell you I'm insane. But I've got a blank space, baby, and I'll write your name. You want be that girl for a month. Wait, the worst is yet to come. Oh no, screaming, crying, perfect storms. I can make all the tables turn. Rose garden filled with thorns. Keep you second guessing, like, oh my god, who is she? I get drunk on jealousy, but you'll come back each time you leave. Cause darling, I'm a nightmare dressed like a daydream. So it's gonna be forever. Your name. Boys only want love if it's torture. Don't say I didn't, say I didn't warn ya. Boys only want love if it's torture. Don't say I didn't, say I didn't warn ya. Your name.
Taylor Swift and her latest number one hit, Blank Space. You know, selling albums apparently is very important for Taylor Swift.
Guess so.
She stirred up some controversy lately with her anti-streaming stance, too. As she was accepting the Dick Clark Award for Excellence at the American Music Awards over the weekend, Taylor Swift took the opportunity to speak out again, and she said to her fans who went out and bought her albums, "You believe in the same thing that I believe in, that music is valuable and should be consumed in albums." And for anybody who has been around a long time, albums are really fun to have. That's music on VOA Global.
What's an album? All right, when you think of Scotch whiskey, what country do you think of?
Oh, Scotland, immediately.
Wrong. Whiskies from Japan have been winning accolades at the Whiskey Magazine Awards for years now, including the world's best single malt. This year, a Japanese distiller took home the prize for the best blended malt whiskey as well. Some Japanese whiskeys are so coveted that buyers have pushed prices at auction up to tens of thousands of dollars a bottle. According to CNN, a Yamakaze single malt aged 50 years went for $33,169 earlier this year at auction in Hong Kong. Only 150 bottles of the stuff were ever produced.
Well, international demand for Japanese whiskey is definitely growing. Exports have increased by 86% since 2008. Taiwan, France, Russia, and China are bringing in the most Japanese whiskey by volume. But even with increased global competition, Scotland still remains the top dog. A Scottish whiskey, a single bottle of Macallan M. Scotch holds the record as the world's most expensive whiskey. That bottle only went for $628,205 at auction. Do you think you would take a sip of that?
Would you drink that stuff?
No, that's probably more of an investment, I would think, or rocket fuel.
No, I think that's too expensive for rocket fuel as well. But nevertheless, somebody's going to enjoy it sometime.
Well, we've enjoyed having you along with our program, VOA Global. Ira, roll the credits.
All right. Let's see. Tracy Carter is our director. Zabar is our technical director. And what does Diane want to be called?
Managing editor.
She's the managing editor, and she's off today, so we can do whatever we want. Have yourself a wonderful day. For Jim, I'm Ira. We'll join you tomorrow.